My name is Stephanie Johnson. My daughter, Anne Christine Johnson, was brutally murdered by her ex-husband, Sean Hardy, in his father's house. Why Did She Stay focuses solely on sharing the stories of abused women in the hope that you will be able to walk a mile in their shoes. You will learn what it's like to come home to a closed fist, this Holocaust against women. Statistically, 1 in 4 women is being physically abused by their intimate partners. These are their stories. And as always, if you are that 1 in 4, immediately reach out to your community's domestic shelter for help. Your life could depend upon it. Hashtag reasons to leave. We're talking today to Betsy Velez, who I first heard of before I met her. She is the sister of Anne Christine's best friend, Ronnie. And in the month before Anne Christine died, she told me that Ronnie had gone down to try to rescue her. And of course she couldn't leave, or said she couldn't leave. But then Ronnie said to her, "Do you want to be like my sister Betsy and get your tits cut off?" And I said, "What?" And she was like, "Oh yeah." And then she matter-of-factly, I know that's not true, but she matter-of-factly told me your story, or part of her story, your story. And it was horrifying. So I thought for our first podcast, we would talk to you because I think your story is fairly graphic. And the purpose of this podcast is to put people inside the minds of a woman who is being abused, has been abused, or is at risk for being abused. So can you tell us a little bit about your ex-husband and how you met him and how the course of your marriage unfolded leading up to the point in time where he did try to kill you?
I met him in the summer of 97, and I met him through a friend of mine that I knew from school.
How old were you?
I was 16 years old. And it started out just as a friendship. He was very sweet. He was very considerate. He was a very good listener. I was going through some difficult times at home. He would sit there and he would give really good advice or just be very, very loving.
How old was he?
17.
Okay.
And he, I don't know, like just the months went by. I didn't know him very long. We met in June. A couple of months later in October, you know, my dad was an alcoholic, so my dad wasn't around a lot. You know, we had a home, we had food, we had clothes. I mean, he provided, he just was very absent. Just a couple of months later, I was just very frustrated and did not want to live at home. I honestly still don't understand why I did this, but, you know, one day he shows up and, you know, he used to come and knock on my bedroom window after everybody was asleep. And I would jump out the window and sit outside the house and talk with him and then jump back in when I was ready to go to sleep. And that day I didn't jump back in. He told me that he would take care of me, that I wouldn't have to worry about anything. And I really wasn't thinking. I just grabbed a bag and I took off. I ran off with him.
Well, that so far sounds kind of par for the course for, you know, possible 16-year-old behavior. Do you want to use his name?
No, well, his name is Martin.
Martin. Now, you're Hispanic. Was he a white guy or Hispanic?
No, he was from Mexico.
Okay. So you kind of both grew up in the same Hispanic culture.
Yes.
So he was very comfortable for you.
Well, yeah, his life, like when he would tell me about how he was raised in his childhood, was a whole lot worse than mine. You know, he was abused, forced to work, and they were not educated. You know, they were not pushed to go to school. So they, at a very young age, he started working. And if they didn't go to work, they got beat, you know. And so he came over here when he was 16 years old to start working.
Well, for purposes of this interview, because this becomes relevant later, he was a legal Mexican, right?
Yes,
yeah,
he was illegal.
So he's not supposed to be here, and he doesn't have papeles.
No.
Okay.
And so I believe we were living together for maybe about 3 or 4 months.
In the town where you were living, or did he take you away from?
No. We were living in Houston. We were actually staying in an apartment complex that was like down the street from my mother's house. It was 2 blocks down the street. And I was living there with him, and I was still in school. I was a junior in high school, and he decided he didn't want me going to school anymore. He wanted me to drop out and stay at home. And I did. You know, that's what he wanted, and I did that. There was no threats. There was no ugliness or anything like that. It had never hit me or anything like that.
Were you still pretty much in love? I mean, you weren't, warning flags weren't being raised in your mind? Nothing.
No. And it was maybe about 1 month before I got pregnant, because I got pregnant 6 months after I had gone to live with him. About 5 months in, he had some family that came down from Dallas, and everybody was drinking, and he had a little bit too much to drink, and was angry at the fact that his brother-in-law came to knock on the bedroom door and asked me for a belt, if he could borrow one of Martin's belts. And I was like, well, I don't know. You got to go and ask Martin. He goes, well, yeah, he told me to come and knock on the door and that you would give me one of his belts. So I went and grabbed one of the belts and I gave it to him, and I closed the door and I went back to what I was doing. And he comes in, Martin comes in, he's got a beer in his hand, and he is furious that I lent his brother-in-law a belt. And I was like, well, he told me you said yes. So I just handed him the first one that I found. And he smacked me in the face with the beer can.
You did not see it coming?
No. And
Were you sitting up, lying down?
I was standing in front of him, and he knocked me to the ground. And
how far along were you at the pregnancy?
I wasn't pregnant yet. This was about a month before I got pregnant. And that night, he went out. He went out, even though I asked him not to go out. He apologized. He was terrified that he had hit me. He was crying. He was really upset. And then I didn't know what to say. I didn't know how to react. I just kind of sat there looking at him. And I was angry, so I didn't want, so I told him, if you're going to go with them, go, because I don't even want to look at you right now. And he left. And after he left, I started thinking about it, and I couldn't go to sleep. So I believe he came back later on that night, and when he came back, he had lipstick on his shirt. And so that's when I found out that they had gone to a bar and were with women, things like that, in those bars. And I got very upset. And the next day, I waited for him to leave, and I grabbed a bag and I packed up whatever I could and I left. And I went back home, and, you know, Ronnie and a couple of people from Stephanie and a couple of other people had come to help me move some of my things. And I went back home, and of course, when I went back home, my dad was not home. So when he got home later on that night, he was drunk. And when he found out that I had moved back home, he came and he told me that it was okay and that I was going to be okay and that no man was going to hit me and he was going to take care of me and that, you know, he would make sure that, you know, Martin wouldn't ever lay a hand on me. And the next day, Martin comes to the house. He realizes I'm gone. He comes to the house, and he comes to talk to my dad. My dad goes outside, and he's talking with him for a few minutes, and then he comes to the door, and he calls me outside, tells me to grab my things and to go.
Your dad?
Yeah.
Is he sober or drunk?
Sober.
Now, had your dad ever hit you before? Or?
Well, yeah.
Yeah, okay. So one abuser handed you over to the other abuser because that's kind of normal behavior.
You know, my dad was, it wasn't, it was more as like when he was angry. Like if we did something we weren't supposed to do, you know, they would use the belt or a chancla or, you know, just.
What was that second one?
Chancla? The sandal. It's like a sandal. Oh,
okay.
And so, yeah, I mean, that was normal. You did something wrong to make him mad and you.
After Martin has this sort of man-to-man with your dad says, leave, Betsy.
Yeah, well, because
you weren't married, though. You were just living with him.
We were just living together. But my dad was like, well, this is the husband that you chose. So now you made your bed, go lie in it. And so, you know, my mom was standing there, and she's like, no, you don't have to go. And I was like, well, I mean, he's telling me to go back. So he talked to my dad. He's not going to do it again. You know, so I was just like, okay, well, you know, my dad said he was going to make sure that, you know, this was going to happen anymore. And we're going to be good. So
did you really love Martin? Or is this just some high school thing and you thought
I think
you
it
were
was a high school thing. You think you're in love and then you, I mean, it doesn't happen right away. They don't show that they're going to be violent or anything like that. I mean, there's little things that they start telling you about yourself and you just...
Insidious. So just kind of to summarize, you know, you have a rough childhood. He has a rougher childhood. And so you kind of start to feel sorry for him. And
yeah.
He's kind of mentoring you and you kind of fall in love and he's taking care of all your emotional needs because he understands you and he gets it. Okay, so going back, your father says, go home with Martin. And so you go back to the apartment?
Yeah, I go back to the apartment and then a month later, you know, I get pregnant. I found out in May. So I find out maybe about 3-4 months later that I was already 10 weeks. I was about 10 weeks pregnant when I found out.
And has he hit you or done anything up to this point?
No, he hadn't hit me anymore and everything was good. And I believe it's when I'm about five and a half months pregnant, my dad has a car accident. He was driving drunk and he hit another drunk driver. They collided and my dad was arrested. And since it was his third DWI, it was a felony. And so they locked him up. And he was a legal resident. They stripped him of his residency, so they kept a hold on him because they were planning to deport him after he did his time for his crime. When my husband found out that my dad had been arrested.
No, wait, you just said husband, so you guys...
Yeah, we eventually got married,
okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
So he found out and he... It was like he was looking for a way out. He wasn't happy about the pregnancy. He tried to stab me. Like, he got a knife and he was trying to scare me and tell me that he was going to stab me. And...
Okay, this is a little confusing. Your father's arrested. He's in jail. He's stripped of his legal residency. And so Martin is using this excuse.
Well, now he doesn't... I don't have anybody to defend me, according to him.
Like, I'm trying to understand this abuser logic.
I had no idea. He totally flipped on me. I was surprised. I didn't, like, he just started, like, he had a knife there.
Oh, he felt empowered because your father's out of the picture in his mind, I guess.
And my dad is nowhere there to protect me.
Okay, so when does this knife get pulled? You're at your house, your apartment?
We're in the apartment. And I had just gotten home from my mother's house. I had gone with my mother to downtown to see my dad in jail. And we came back and he had asked me, where were you? And I was like, I went with my mom to downtown. And, you know, I told him my dad got arrested.
So for those who are not familiar with Houston, I don't want to call it central lockup, but that's Harris County Jail. Isn't that where you pretty much go until you receive a sentence? And then
Harris County. Yeah.
Yeah. And it's not a nice place. So,
no.
Yeah. So you go home.
And I'm telling him, you know, what happened to my dad.
Was he drinking?
No. It was over. And when he did that, it scared me.
So you're sitting there talking to him and then he just whips the knife out?
Yeah. He just whips it out.
I always want to hear the details. I'm trying to
Well, with his work, you know, he would use box cutters and...
So he carried something in his pocket.
He always had...
So were you sitting down or were you standing up?
We were sitting down. We were sitting at the edge of the bed and I was folding laundry. And I was, you know, I had the dresser open and I'm sitting at the edge of the bed and I'm, you know, folding up, you know, the socks and undershirts and things and putting them away. And he just pulls out his knife and he's just, you know, and I'm looking at him, I'm like, are you crazy? Like, what is wrong with you? And he goes, well, now you don't have anybody to take care of you. You don't have anybody that's going to protect you. I mean, because your brothers aren't going to do anything, you know. My older brother, pretty much didn't get involved. And my younger brother was too young. He was He was in middle school. Like, what was he going to do?
So is this like a Mexican culture thing that I'm missing here? Like, you're a kept person, you know, like you're under the protection. It just doesn't make sense. But I guess none of this makes any sense.
No, I don't know where he was getting. I don't know what kind of conversation him and my dad had. Like, I don't know what was said. I do not. The times that they would have conversations, you know, it was a man thing. So I was never.
Man to man.
Yeah, so I was never around. So I don't know where he would get his.
So when you're folding this laundry and he whips out this knife, is he pointing it at you?
No, he just lies it right in between me and him and just kind of tells me I could use this. And he's holding on to it, or I would have picked it up and ran off with it. But no, he's just.
How did you react? I mean, could you? I mean, I know you were shocked, mentally, were you, like, afraid? Were you?
It did make me uneasy because, like, he just wouldn't stop. After, like, 10 or 15 minutes, he just kind of looked at me. I was like, are you serious? Are you crazy? And he just started laughing. And he looked at me and he's like, you really started getting scared, didn't you? And he goes, I'd never do that to you. And then he just got up and turned around and walked out of the room. Like, it was, like, the strangest thing. And a couple of days later, it was making me nervous because he would just sit there and stare. He wouldn't say anything. He would just sit there and stare.
And you're pregnant with his child?
Yeah. I was about 5 months, 5.5 months pregnant. I left him again because I'm like, I can't sleep. I was like, I can't sleep because what if I go to sleep and he, you know. And so I went back home and, you know, my mom was very overwhelmed with everything that was going on. You know, like there was no income coming in because, you know, my dad was locked up. My mom did not work. She was a housewife. And then, you know, my sister was in high school and Andy was still, you know, my younger brother was still in middle school and my older brother had already graduated and he was working, but it wasn't enough to pay the bills. So
you go home pretty much to kind of a different kind of chaos.
Yeah.
Safe chaos, but
I stayed for about a day or two. And then when, you know, Martin showed up and started telling me, and he goes, you know, you're just another mouth to feed. And then when the baby comes, I mean,
things he sucked like you right back, didn't he?
And yeah, I started thinking, he's like, do you really think your mom needs to have all this extra? And, you know, when the baby comes, you know, your mom's going to have a lot on your plate. You don't know where your dad's going to be. And I went back, you know, you know, I started hearing a lot from his family. You know, his sister lived with us. One of his brothers lived with us.
How big is this apartment?
It's a 2-bedroom.
So you've really got no privacy.
Yeah,
and you've got privacy. People who are loyal to him coming and going.
So they would always tell me, you know, you can't just keep leaving him. You're having his child. And his sister would make took comments to me and tell me, you know, that's his baby and you can't take him away and the baby needs his father and do you really want to raise a child with no father? And behind my back, I found out later, she would go and she would tell Martin that while he was at work, I would go out with men so that there was no real, like, was not 100% sure that that was his child.
Well, I hate to use this word since I'm not an expert, but you had two psychos in that family, basically.
All of them are psycho in that family. So that's, and apparently that was his justification for doing the things that he did, these weird things that he would just come up and.
Yeah, my sister said.
He wouldn't even tell me. He would just, I thought he would come home, you know, after I moved back and I was like about 6 months pregnant. My dad was in jail. He threw out the bed that we slept in, saying that it was tainted and we couldn't use it anymore.
Because he was confident you had men sleeping in it? Or
who knew? I know now that that's probably what he was thinking, but at the moment I was like, what is wrong with you? Like, seriously, what is wrong with you? And so he bought a mattress and he put it on the bed. So we would sleep on the floor on a mattress.
Oh, he threw out the bed, not just, okay, I was thinking it was just the mattress.
No, he threw everything out and just went and bought a new mattress and put it in the corner of the bedroom.
Okay, so when does he become physical or violent? Or
when he bought the mattress and put it on the bed, on a weekly basis, he would go out, he would get drunk, he would come home, and he'd start kicking me. Like, just, and I'm thinking that's why he threw out the bed. He wanted a better angle of me, I guess. I don't know.
So you're what, 6 months pregnant?
Yeah,
here?
6 months
pregnant.
Is he
kicking you in the stomach, the back?
He's trying. And he's trying. So what I do is I roll up into a ball and I just, you know, I take the hits in the back.
How long does this go on for?
About 2 months.
No, but I mean when he starts kicking you.
Oh, until he would get tired.
You must have had bruises all over your body.
Yeah.
Did he bruise you in places that nobody else could see?
Would be in places like my back or my legs and things like that. But the clinic where I was going for the maternity care started to take notice. And they asked me if I wanted help. And by this time, I was already scared because it's like, okay, if he's kicking me and I'm carrying his child, then what would he do if I start talking about it? So I was like, no. You know, no. And I wasn't healthy. Like, I was not allowed to eat certain things.
Like we would according to him.
Yeah. Well, we would go to the groceries and everybody would chip in, you know, like $50 for the groceries. And they would buy meat and, you know, vegetables, just basic groceries. But I wasn't allowed to eat any of the meat because they ate meat with salsa, you know, with chile. And I didn't eat that. Like if I got steak or something like that, I would fry the steak and I would fry it with onion or tomato or stuff like that. But I wouldn't eat hot food, like spicy food. And me cooking the meat and taking a little bit of meat out from the one that was cooked, separate some of it before I would mix it with salsa or whatever kind of stuff they wanted to eat it with, was wasting food. So I would eat rice and vegetables. I was allowed to eat beans. If I wanted meat, I had to go and buy a burger down the street. Like there were certain, like that was his family's rules. Like if I wanted to eat meat, then we had to put in extra money for groceries.
There isn't an angle of control they didn't think of.
No. So when I would go to the doctor, they would tell me, you know, I was anemic. There was all kinds of issues. You need to eat more protein, more things like that. And I mean, they knew, but I wouldn't admit to it, so nothing would be done. It's not like that anymore in the medical field.
I would think not. Let's hope not.
No, it's not. There is a questionnaire out there now that you fill out. It's anonymous, and you don't put your name on it or anything. You hand it out they give you the choice of it to hand it to the medical staff, and it's a lot easier. No.
Yeah, and I should insert here that the audience may not be aware, since we didn't mention it, but you are a legal assistant and you do work with family lawyers, so you have a little bit more knowledge of what goes on now.
Yes, and then before being in the legal field, I was in the medical field, so I worked for a federally qualified health center, and we worked with a lot of low income, so that's where most of your domestic violence is, where it goes unreported. You know, the low income, you know, the illegals that feel like they have no say or no right.
The most marginalized women with everything to lose if they get deported. So back to your pregnancy, this kicking is all that he's doing, and it continues up until you deliver your baby, or does it escalate while you're still pregnant?
Until we moved out. I was about 8 months pregnant when he had a falling out with his brother. And we were kicked out of the apartment. From there, we had to go and stay with one of his sisters for about a month. And while I was with his sister, there was no abuse there. We got an apartment in the same complex in front of his sister. And when I, like maybe about 2 weeks before I went into labor. And after I had everything was good. Everything had stopped. When I had the baby, I think the baby was about a month old.
And by the way, what's your baby's name?
Martin.
Martin Jr.
Well, he's not a junior. I gave him a middle name.
Okay, good.
I believe he was about a month old when I was cooking breakfast one morning, and he didn't want to eat what I had cooked. He said he didn't feel like eating what I had made. So he wanted me to throw out the food that I had made to make him specifically what he wanted. And then told me, because I'm going to be honest, I wasn't a very great cook. If I didn't get the recipe right this time, that I was going to be sorry. Well, I got angry because, you know, money was tight. We had the baby. I was paying for the formula. I didn't have any assistance, you know, with WIC or anything like that. The only thing I had was the Medicaid. And I didn't have food stamps or anything like that. So we were having to pay out of pocket for that formula. And so money was tight.
You're probably exhausted from being a new mother.
And I told him, no, I'm not going to throw this food away because it's a waste of money. And before he would even let me finish saying as to why I wasn't going to throw it out, he slapped me. And he slapped me so hard that it knocked me into the wall and then eventually onto the floor. You know, it's like I bounced off the wall and then went to the floor. And my son was in his swing. And he was watching. Like, he's sitting there, you know, it's swinging, it's playing the little music, you know. And I go to the floor. He grabs the broom and he just starts beating me with it in front of my son. And then I start yelling at him. He's like, you know, the baby is watching. You know, what are you doing? And he just kept going until we got tired.
Did you have any sense of how much time was passing, or were you just...
No.
In your mind, did you go someplace in your mind, or did you just shut down? I mean, how did
you endure? I would shut down. By that time, after I had the baby, it like scared me because it was different. You know, before you would just lie there and go into a ball and it was okay because it was just me. I had the baby inside of me, but if I stayed into a ball, nothing would happen to baby. Now it was different. It was scary because now the child is there, you know, and the child is watching. So if something happens to me, you know, what's going to happen to my child? And at that time, that was around the time he started threatening to take the baby from me. He's like, you know, I can get this baby and take him to Mexico and have my mom raise him, and you wouldn't be able to do anything about it because I'm on the birth certificate. There was no child support order. There was no court order. There was nothing that stated that the child was in my custody. And that terrified me. And I mean, at this time, I'm like 17. I'm 17 years old. And I don't know anything about law. I don't know anything about anything because at this point, I'd never had a job. I'd just gone to school. And so I was very naive and just very uneducated in a lot of things.
So here you are, the baby's mother, your name's on the birth certificate. He's basically an illegal alien, and he's threatening you.
Yeah.
That he's going to disappear to Mexico, which is very easy
to do.
Which
he could if his name was on the birth certificate. So he had as much right as I did.
So now he has leverage. He thinks he can do whatever he wants to you. And there's no,
and then it keeps on getting worse. He just keeps beating and beating and beating and beating.
Like a daily basis?
Yeah. And you know, 2 months goes by, my child's like 3 months old. It was the day of my birthday, actually, the day I turned 18 years old. I was supposed to be enrolling into a program that was offered at a church by my mother's house to help people get their GED, you know, high school dropouts get their GED. And we had been talking about it. I had been telling him, you know, I'm going to go. I'm going to sign up. I'm going to go get my GED. I'm not going back to school. I'm just going to go and get my GED. And I'd mentioned it like a couple of days before because I didn't want to have any trouble on the day that I was going to go. And he seemed to be fine with it. He's like, well, your mom's going to go with you. That's because I always had to have my mom or somebody with me that was not a man. Even my male relatives couldn't be alone with me. He just was very, very jealous and very, very possessive. And
was he stalking you, do you think? Or were you afraid that he was following you?
He started to after that day, because that day that I was supposed to start school, I got up in the morning, I got the baby dressed, I showered, I got dressed, and I was heading out, fixing to go to the bus stop, and he was leaving for work, and he's like, "Where do you think you're going?" And I'm like, "Well, I told you, you know, I'm going to go and sign up." He worked two blocks away from my mother. You would think that he would give me the ride if he's so paranoid that I'm going to meet somebody on the bus, because I had to take two buses to get to my mother's from where I lived. And I was like, "You can give me a ride so you can talk to my mom and my mom can tell you where I'm going to be." And he said, "No, you're not going anywhere." And he's like, "Put the baby down." So I was like, "Well, why are you going to get mad?" I started seeing that he was getting mad. And at this point, when he would get angry, my legs would turn to jello. Like, I couldn't feel my legs, and I'd start getting that scary feeling in the pit of your stomach. So I started backing away from him, and I went and I put the baby down on the couch and put some pillows there so he wouldn't roll off, and he beat me.
With his fist?
Yeah, with his fist. And just told me that I wasn't going to go anywhere. And,
you know, one of the things I've always thought about, especially in Anne Christine's case, is what is it like to be looking at someone that's going to hit you in the face? I mean, you're like looking into the eyes of evil. I mean, you're like wondering how it's going to hit, how it's going to feel when he cracks your cheek with his knuckles.
No, because it happens fast. Like, he would be calm, and he'd be angry, and you could tell he would, and then he would like calm down, and he would do this thing, like he would put his hands in front of him like he's trying to calm himself down, and then he would put his hands down, and then just,
you would never see it coming.
No.
So the day that you're supposed to be enrolling for your GED, instead you're in your apartment with your baby on the couch and you're being beaten.
Yes.
All over your body. Mm-hmm. This goes on for
about half an hour.
Oh my God.
And then he's like, "Well, now that your face is all bruised up, you know, you're not going to go anywhere. So, you know, I'll see you after work, and my dinner better be ready when I get home." So I wait about an hour, and then I leave. I just take off. I grab the baby, and I go home, and I move back home. I mean, I think he spent like 2 months after I left him coming to see the baby.
So you haven't got a protective order, a restraining order, nothing.
No, I didn't know anything about that. And he spent like 2 months coming to see the baby and
acting normal, I presume, and loving, I'm guessing.
And then when I started to trust him again, I told him I wasn't going to move back in with him. We had to give it more time because I didn't trust him. On one of our outings, we were driving down Yale Street.
This is in the Heights of Houston.
And we started, you know, going towards our old apartment because his sister still lived there. And we were sitting at a light, and he just reached over and knocked me in the face. Just punched me in the face. And I started bleeding from my nose. Grabbed me from my hair and just started kind of knocking my head into the side of the door. And he passed up his sister's apartment and then tells me to get out of the truck. And I'm like, "No." And I said, "What are we doing? We're at a park." And he goes, "Well, we're going to take baby for a stroll in the park." And so he parks the truck on the side of the road and acts like we're getting out. So I open the door and I step out and I go and I start to unbuckle the baby from the car seat, and he speeds off.
With the baby in the car?
With the baby in the car.
Oh my God.
And I don't know how I did it, but I grabbed onto the side mirror. Like, I just grabbed onto the handle and the side mirror, and eventually my hand, you know, slipped from the door and went. I grabbed onto the mirror and he dragged me on the ground for a mile. And he had to stop because
I hadn't heard this story before. You're trying to keep him from driving off with your infant son, so you grab the door handle and you won't let go, and he drags you for a mile. Are you? You're not being walking fast or jogging to keep
up. No, he's dragging me.
And he knows he's dragging you.
Yes. And he eventually had to stop because there were people around. My legs were scraped up, the knees and my thighs, and my pants were ripped. I was bleeding from my face because of how he had hit me earlier. My hair was in all kinds. I had a chunk of hair missing off from the left side of my head. And I just get up and he tells me to get into the truck, and I get into the truck and he drives off. And he's going down Tidwell. And we're passing up Sam Houston High School. And he pulls into a gas station. Says he needs gas and that he was going to take me over to his brother's house. And that he wanted to borrow his brother's gun. You know, I asked him, I was like, what are we going to your brother's house for? And he goes, well, he's got a gun, I want to borrow it. And his brother has a house that's surrounded by wooded area. Like, it's off in northeast Houston, off of Mesa Road and Tidwell. And there's like a bunch of trees and just...
dumping grounds.
Yeah.
Okay, and the name of this podcast is Why Did She Stay? So at this point, I want to stop what you're saying, interrupt you here, and like, why did you stay in that car? I mean, why at this point, after all he's done, you don't just take the baby and flee?
I did eventually.
I know, but at this point in time.
At this point, it was looking for an opportunity to get the child out of the car without the baby getting hurt. Because I needed to unbuckle the whole seat because I didn't want to take the baby out because I was afraid that in the whole process of running that I would drop the child. Like at this, Marty's, you know, 3 months old, you know, 4 months old. And you still have to hold his neck and you still, and I was always a nervous mother. Like I was always afraid to touch him or to change his clothes because I was afraid I would pull an arm off or something. Like I was just so paranoid. He's so tiny. He was a full-term baby, but he was just very small. His birth weight was like a little over 5 pounds, and I take that was from the lack of heating.
being kicked. So does he goes to his brother's house and he gets the gun?
No, he stops at this gas station, and he's putting gas in his truck. And see, he's putting the gas in the truck. I go and I undo the car seat, and I'm trying to pull the car seat over towards me, and he comes and he sticks his head in through the driver's window and he goes, don't you even think about it. By the time you get that, he goes, I put the car seat in there, it's got a knot in the seat belt, there's no way you're going to get that seat out of there. And he goes, so don't even try it. And so he goes back to pumping gas, and I'm looking and I'm like, okay, he's almost done pumping gas. I was like, to hell with it. I unhooked the baby and I took the baby out the car seat and I got out the truck. And he's like, what are you doing? He's like, don't you even think about it. And he goes, because I will grab you before you hit that door. Because my idea was to run inside the store for help.
Well, I would presume that they could have looked at you at that point and called 911 after everything that had just happened to you.
And so he started to walk around the truck towards me. So in the direction that he would walk in, I would go the opposite direction. And it was just kind of like a back and forth. And then I did kind of like a fake out. I don't even know how I did this. And I ran in front of the truck. And I waited for a car full of guys to pull up. And I saw the car. They were looking at me. One of them was staring pretty bad. I'm pretty sure I looked like crap that day. And I just took off. And I was like, well, if this dude's looking at me and he's giving me a look of, oh my God, what the hell just happened to you? Just maybe this one will do something to keep him away from me. And I ran to the door. And as I grabbed the door and I was opening it, he grabbed the back of my shirt. So when he grabbed the back of my shirt, I started to scream. He let go of me. He got back in the truck and he took off with the passenger door swinging. And then he stopped and he closed the door and he took off. And they called the cops, and the cops sat there and waited with me. I had no diaper bag. I had no formula. I had nothing for this baby because everything I had left in the truck. This police officer bought me some diapers, bought me a can of formula for the baby. while I waited for my parents to come and get me. And my parents were taking a long time to come and get me because they couldn't find me. And Ronnie was with my parents when they were looking for me. And all they knew is that I was on Tidwell, somewhere close to Sam Houston High School, at a corner store. And they were going, apparently they had gone past that store several times. They spent about an hour and a half looking for me. They couldn't find the store. And they had gone as far down Tidwell because they knew basically the area where his brother lived. And they're like, well, maybe he got her and he brought her over this way. And so they're going back and forth. And as they're going back there, I find out later from my mom that as they were waiting at a light off of Tidwell and Mesa, there was yellow tape, crime scene, cops, an ambulance, and a medical examiner. And they were rolling a body out of the woods that was...
where you could have ended up. Oh my God, Betsy.
And I did not... I mean, Ronnie stayed quiet. She was teary-eyed. When they finally got me, the cop was tired of waiting. He was just going to call somebody to bring a car seat.
But... did you file an official police report at this point?
Yes, okay. I had filed.
So now you've got a little bit. This is the first inkling of a paper trail on his record.
Yes.
Okay.
But the DA didn't accept the charges because they said the only thing.
The district attorney did not accept the charges.
Because I would just drop them like everybody else.
So yeah, you're being treated like every other marginalized, abused woman. Although I'll withhold judgment on how that might have changed in 2019. This year again is what?
This is 1998.
Okay, so this is a long time ago.
1999.
Okay. So you go home with your family, and how long do you stay this time?
Oh, I'm there permanently. Like, I stay there, and not permanently, but for a while. After that, he ended up moving to Dallas. He left for Dallas, and he would send me money for the baby every 3 or 4 months, like he wasn't regular with sending me money. And he would call me and check on the baby, and that was that. And he was on his way down, supposedly, according to him. He had gone out drinking with some friends, and they had done some coke, and he smoked a lot of weed. So apparently he was on all kinds of stuff, and he was on his way to Houston from Dallas. And he had gotten as far as Conroe when he got pulled over for speeding and driving all over the road, like erratically. He was arrested and charged with DWI and DUI and possession because he had cocaine and weed in the car. And they deported him. He signed a voluntary deportation and he was sent back to Mexico.
And this is how long after you sat with a cop on the curb and your family couldn't find you and...
3 months, 4 months.
Okay. So he gets deported, yay. Yeah. So are you sitting back going, my troubles are over, I'm safe?
He was deported and I went back to school. I started medical assisting school. And he eventually came back.
Illegally?
Yeah, he came back illegally, went back to Dallas. And
How long after he was deported did he
A year
come
and
back?
A half. And so he...
Did you know he was in the country?
Yeah, he called me to tell me when he came back. And then he told me that he wanted to work things out and that he was better now and that he was going to behave. And, you know, I couldn't leave my son without his dad. And I was overwhelmed with, I wasn't working. My dad was supporting me. I was like mooching off my parents is what he was telling me. You know, like, you're just... What he called me was arrimada. So it's like a moocher. Like somebody like a leech, uh-huh. I guess. Like, I was just... And I had finished school. I had been working. And I got laid off from my job because it was cheaper to keep interns than it was to hire people. So they hired me until they could get more interns from the school that I had gone to. So once they had an intern that was going to start, they let me go.
And so how old is little baby Martin at this point?
A little over a year and a half. He's almost 2 years old.
So you're almost back on your feet. You're almost rid of him. You lose your job. He's like the little worm that crawls back in your head and starts to tell you things, that you're a leech.
And so I packed up my bag. Yeah. I fell for it. And I packed my bags and I went back. I moved up to Irving.
To Dallas.
Yeah, to Dallas. Yeah. And I'm there for about, in total, I was there for maybe 2 months. Within the first 2 weeks that I was there, I gotten a job at Kroger in the pharmacy. I was already set up for them to pay for me to go to pharmacy technician school. We were staying with his sister, the toxic one. And one day he just doesn't come home. He just didn't come home from work, which was really weird because his brother-in-law showed up. I was like, well, you know, where's Martin? He's like, well, I don't know. He goes, they drove in a separate car. And he goes, I had my car, so. And I'm like, okay, well, if y'all left together, why didn't you come back together? And he's like, I don't know. He said he was going to go with, you know, a coworker, and they were going to go somewhere else. He wouldn't give me any answers as to where they were going, so I just assumed that he was going to a bar or that he was going drinking or whatever and that he'd be back later. Well, in the morning when he didn't come home, it scared me. And so I started calling hospitals to see if anything had happened, and nothing. I couldn't find him. And then I get a call from his boss, who just so happens to be the brother-in-law of the coworker my husband is with, telling me that his sister is telling him that her husband never came home and wanted to know if Mike's husband came home. And I said, no, he didn't come home. So he's like, I guess I'm going to start looking in the hospitals. I'm like, well, I've already checked, you know, this one, and this one. I'm new here. I'm not familiar with the hospitals. So, you know, those are the only ones that I checked. And he said, okay, I'll check the rest of them. And maybe about half an hour later, he calls me and tells me that he got a call from his brother-in-law that both of them are in jail. And I said, okay, well, what is he in jail for? And he goes, I don't know. And he's like, he just told me he's locked up, that he doesn't know why they got locked up. And, you know, this guy doesn't speak any English. So he's like, I'm like, okay, well, what jail are they in? Because I called Dallas County, you know, I called the city. There's nobody there. And he's like, no, they're in Collin County.
He's taken a trial for these charges.
And I'm like, in Collin County? I'm like, where is that? He goes, McKinney, Texas.
I sat there during the trial.
Which is how far from Dallas?
About a year.
About
after he got arrested?
North.
When he was in jail
and
for a
so
year.
Yeah,
he was sitting in Collin County for a year before they took him to trial.
Couldn't get any
and
information
I went to the
on
trial.
The
and I was
co-worker.
There every single last
but they would
day
give
of information.
And I sat there and I listened to
at this time
the woman that was supposedly kidnapped and sexually assaulted. And I listen to everything that
they tell me he was arrested.
My husband testified, so I listened to everything he said, and his coworker testified, and I listened to everything.
And you're not buying this, or you're thinking, oh, I've heard this before?
When I first heard about it, like when they told me, I was in shock, and I was angry. So the first thing I did was I packed up my things, because there was no way that I was going to stay in that apartment alone with my brother-in-law and give my brother-in-law's, you know, Martin's brothers and everybody else a reason to say that something's going on between me and my brother-in-law. And I couldn't afford the rent with what I was making at Kroger. And what I did was I packed up a bag, and all I had was $20 to my name, because earlier that day, the day that before Martin got arrested, I don't know what happened, but my sister-in-law was watching the baby while I was in the shower. I came out from the shower to hear my sister-in-law screaming that something was wrong with my baby. So I come out and I see my child covered in hives, and he can't breathe, like he's having trouble breathing. I lived down the street from a clinic, an emergency clinic. So I grabbed him and I took all the money that I had, which was about $500. And I went to the clinic and I told them, you know, I don't know what happened. He's covered in hives. He can't breathe. They said he had an allergic reaction. They had to give him an injection for the allergic reaction. They did a visit and everything, and it came out to $480 with the medicine.
I'll defer my judgment here on the medical system for people that can't
afford. I had no
insurance,
and the Medicaid had expired, and I never renewed it because I didn't.
And your son wasn't covered by Medicaid.
No, I didn't renew it because I never went to get the Medicaid or the food stamps or anything like that, because we were told we can't. My dad raised us like that. He goes, if I raise four kids with not living off the welfare system, none of my children are going to live off the welfare system.
Your dad's tape is still playing in your brain.
So we're not allowed to live off the government. So the first year I did. But then after that, I never renewed anything. I got a job and I started working. So
okay, so your husband is acquitted. Bless.
Yeah.
And what happens then?
He moves back to Houston. He moves back to Houston after he's acquitted. What had happened was they had gone to a strip club. And when they were leaving the strip club, there was a prostitute on the side of the road. And his coworker was used to picking up prostitutes. So they picked up the prostitute. And they didn't want to pay for a hotel. And my husband didn't want to pay for the hotel. According to him, he didn't want to pay for the hotel because it was a black woman and he was not attracted to black women. And he felt like he shouldn't have to pay for a hotel room that he's not going to use. That was his logic on that. And the guy that wanted to be with the prostitute didn't want to pay for the hotel because he just didn't want to pay for the hotel. So they decided that they were going to take the woman to the house where they were working.
Because they were in construction. Gets fishier and fishier.
So they were working on a house. It wasn't done, but it pretty much had the skeleton and all that. They just needed to paint it and do some final touching and stuff. And so they tried to get into the house, but they couldn't get into the house because the doors and the windows were locked. So it's an abandoned house. They go up there. So this guy has no choice but to, be with the prostitute inside the vehicle. So my husband got out so that they could use the back seat or do whatever it was. And it was cold. It was snowing. It was in November. So it was snowing up in Dallas. And he got angry because they were taking too long. So he started knocking on the window and he was getting angry. Because he wanted to come home. And he scared the woman. Like, the woman thought that, my husband was going to do something to her. And so that guy gets out and lets my husband in. And apparently she tries to start something with my husband. And my husband is not in any condition to do that. So she got frustrated and told him that he wasn't a man because he couldn't get an erection. And when she told him that he wasn't a man, he got mad and called her, some names and pushed her onto the ground. So the coworker calms my husband down and tells the girl to get in the vehicle. And they're coming back towards Dallas, but he needs to stop to get gas. So he decides he's going to start talking to this girl about her lifestyle, her job. Wants to know how she can do this for a living and not be scared that she's going to be killed or, just abused or whatever, And she starts freaking out because she's like out in the middle of nowhere because McKinney, there is nothing. It's like...
Well, he's just gaslighted her too. I mean, he's like gone from telling her... expletives to like trying to be solicitous about her future safety.
So they stop at this store to get gas, and this girl gets out of the vehicle with no shoes, no socks, takes off her shirt, leaves just her bra on and this little tiny skirt that she was wearing, and runs into the store and says that she was kidnapped and that they raped her and that they assaulted her and that they were threatening to kill her so that she didn't know where she was going to be taken
and all kinds of stuff. And I can see where she was probably paranoid about something happening to her, because, you know, when my husband would get angry, he was pretty scary to look at. But that was just, it was plain stupidity. And that's what the judge said when he got acquitted. Both of you are really stupid. Fucking stupid. And yeah, he got acquitted and he was in line to be deported. But for some reason, they didn't deport him. They just let him go.
So what did it cross your mind that not too far back, you had suffered far worse abuse and almost died, and he just doesn't get prosecuted because the DA just thinks that all abused women just change their mind and it's not worth the time. And here, this woman, you know, they're going to trial. I guess maybe because the kidnap charge pushed the DA up there into taking action. So, okay, that happens. He's acquitted. You come back to Houston. You're living in Houston with him. And it starts again?
It starts again.
And how does it
play out? It starts again. It plays out, and I left him. I had ran away to Ronnie's house.
Ronnie's your sister.
Mm-hmm. I ran away to Ronnie's house and stayed at Ronnie's house. And the next day, my dad finds out that I'm at Ronnie's house. And he comes and he tells me that I can't stay with Ronnie. So he makes Ronnie go and drop me off.
Back to Martin.
Yeah. And so my sister is crying. And she goes and she drops me off, and she doesn't want to leave because she's afraid, since I spent the night out, that he was going to be mad and that he was going to take it out on me. And she's like, I am like physically sick right now. You know, like Ronnie was just.
So you were with Ronnie just a couple nights? One night when your
father? It was one night. It was just one night. And he shows up and he's just like, you can't stay here. You have to go back.
So you go back, and what happens? Ronnie stays, and of course, Ronnie has to leave.
Ronnie eventually ends up leaving. And he beat me with a belt buckle. At this time, I was working at a pediatric clinic at Memorial Hermann. And I called in to work a lot because my boss did not like to see the bruises. And he goes, we work in a pediatric clinic. I can't have that kind of stuff here. I'm not going to fire you. And he goes, but this needs to, it needs to stop. And I had a really close friend that was a LVN there, that she grabbed some nightgowns and made me put on the nightgowns and started documenting everything. And it was like that for like 6 months. In those 6 months, I'd moved like two or three times. And he kept getting arrested and he kept getting deported, and it just, he would come back and.
Wait, we're talking about after you returned to Houston, after your father, make sure you go. So the next 6 months, the beatings just continue, they escalate. But this time somebody finally has your back, your coworker. Yeah.
And I had gone and tried to make two reports, and it didn't work. Like, the cops wouldn't show up. I moved into the same apartment complex where Ronnie and Stephanie lived. They were rooming together. And I lived by myself up front. And he found me. And he came and he started with, you know, this time it's different. You know, I'm getting tired of getting deported. I'm getting tired of getting locked up. You know, I haven't been able to keep a steady job. I really want to be different. This last time he had been locked up, he was locked up in there with a pastor. He started going to church. He started taking me to church. He started volunteering. He started doing all these things with this guy that was locked up. And I was a little skeptical at first, because it's like, well, I mean, how good of a person can you be if you were locked up? Like, what were you locked up for? You know? And I asked him, and I was like, well, you know, what was this guy locked up for? And he's like, I don't know. And I was like, you don't know, but yet you're trusting this guy. And you're handing this guy money so that he can build this church, but you don't know what he was locked up for? And, like, he told me, he's like, he goes, I'm not hitting you anymore. We're not fighting. We're not arguing. I'm trying to be a better person. Why are you so skeptical? Why are you fighting this so much? And then it made me feel like, okay, well, he's actually changing now, and he's trying to be a good dad, and he's trying to be a good husband. Maybe I should do this. So there we were, and we were going to church, and we were singing in a choir, and we were doing volunteer work, you know, helping, you know, the homeless, doing things. And
you have a full-time job.
Yeah, okay. We would do this on Saturdays and Sundays.
So, superficially at least, your life's getting together. And so, right? What happens?
This guy, one day we show up to church, and we're sitting outside the church, and we're waiting. And we rented a church that was in the Heights. I'm not really sure what the religion was, but their church days are on Saturdays, not Sundays. So they would rent the church out to us to do our services on Sunday, since they use the church on Saturdays. And so we're sitting outside the church waiting when the owners of the church come, and they're asking for this guy, the pastor. And I was like, well, I don't know. You know, last time we saw him was like 2 days ago. We had dinner with them, and, you know, we're meeting here. And he goes, y'all had dinner? I'm like, yes, everybody from the church had dinner, because we had to give him the money to pay the rent. This guy hadn't paid the rent in 2 months. So he took off. Nobody could find him. He took off with the money. And so Martin used this as an excuse, as, you know,
time to beat Betsy again.
You know, what was the whole point of trying to be, you know, all church-like and try to be good? And you know, I told him, and I said, you know,
your con man pastor, what did you expect? Did that provoke Martin?
I didn't mean to like shove it in his face or anything. And it's like, well, I mean, you met him in jail. I was like, this is why I was asking. What was he in there for? Did you ever find out? And I don't know if maybe he felt stupid, and I made it worse by even making a comment. He got mad at me. He didn't hit me that day. He got mad at me. And he left the house for like 2 or 3 days. And by this time, my mom had already taken my son to live with her.
Out of concern?
Yeah. And she told me that I was in no position to be watching him, and that he was safer.
And how old is he at this point?
This was 2003, so he's about 4.
And he's witnessed, by this point, he's probably witnessed a lot of violence in the home.
He witnessed some, but he didn't witness all of it, because my mom had already taken him out of the house about a year and a half, 2 years prior to that.